We dressed all in green and yellow to celebrate Whit Day and sang, "Summer is a-comin' in," although it was so cold and rainy that the dancers fought to wear the tree costumes, which are clumsy but warm, and all were wet and bedraggled. We were happy to think on the church ale to come. 4th day of June, Feast of St. Edfrith, scribe and artist, like me. Quiet today. I am sore of head and sour of stomach, but warm. 5th day of June, Feast of St. Boniface, who wrote the first Latin grammar used in England. I helped an aunt today. She carried a burden so heavy it looked to crush her. A crumb it was, or a speck of wheat, or a drop of honey that had hardened in the sun. She was struggling to take it back to her nest, where it would feed her fellow ants for a day or a week, as small as it was. So intent was she on carrying her crumb that she didn't notice me at all. I watched as she staggered and fell and bumped and stumbled, making slow progress toward what must have been her home. But day was nearly over. I knew the villagers would be driving their animals back through the meadow to pen them for the night, and the tiny ant and her precious crumb would be smashed into the dirt. I had to help her. First, I searched around for other ants to see where they were going. I followed a line of ants running to and from a hole in the dirt, some in, some out, some sideways, all around the hole. This must be home, I thought. I put a piece of a leaf in front of the ant. All intent on her burden and unaware of me, she walked onto the leaf. Then I went to the hole in the dirt where all the ant activity was. It was only a few steps for me, but seemed a lifetime's journey for an ant. I put the leaf down by the hole. The ant walked around the leaf, up the stem and down the side, stumbled around in circles for a bit, twitched her feelers like my brother Robert hitching up his breeches, and walked down the ant hole, still balancing her morsel. I felt as though I had saved the whole world. 6th day of June, Feast of Saints Goodwall, Jarloth, Norbert, Agobard, Artemius, Candida, and Pauline. Truly, I'm not making this up. The beast my father woke up roaring like a real beast this morning. Toothache. He rubbed garlic on his thumb and left the smelly paste there all day, but that reliable remedy failed him. He roars that he will go to Lincoln to the tooth puller, but my mother is afraid that pulling the tooth will leave a hole in his head where evil spirits can get into his body. I think it more likely that evil spirits could get out. 8th day of June, Feast of St. William of York, at whom my great-great-great-great-grandmother once threw a cabbage. My mother convinced the beast to send to the abbey for the Spanish physician. She thinks mayhap he can cure my father's toothache without leaving a hole. 11th day of June, Feast of St. Barnabas, the first missionary. 2 days ago, the Spanish physician was here. He told my father that the toothache is due to an imbalance of humours in his body and recommended letting out some excess blood by cutting a vein under his tongue. The beast submitted meekly, for him, until the knife pierced his tongue. He swung out and knocked the little man from Spain from his stool. Finally, the physician managed to cut the vein and caught the heavy dark blood in a cooking pot. But today the beast still roared, so the physician returned. The toothache, it seems, comes not from unbalanced humours, but from a tooth worm, which has burrowed deep into my father's jaw. This new cause required a new remedy, so the physician mixed henbane leaves with sheep fat, rolled this into little pellets, and dropped them on the fire. My father leaned over and breathed in the smoke through his mouth. Sparks kept leaping up and starting his beard on fire. He looked like a demon from the mouth of hell, smouldering and bellowing. I went outside and helped Meg make cheese. 13th day of June, feast of St. Anthony of Padua, who once preached to fish. We go today to Lincoln, to the tooth puller. The physician came again yesterday, escorted by 6 of my father's men. He told my father that this toothworm was especially stubborn and malignant, and that nothing would do but a poultice of raven manure on the sore tooth. I saw the little man running, robes pulled up over hairy, skinny legs, followed by my father's roar, and not even his 6 escorts could bring him back. Morwena convinced my mother that we need new embroidery silks that none but she and I could select, so we go too. It is Corpus Christi week, and on Thursday the guilds of Lincoln will deck their wagons with flowers and herbs and pull them through the town to the cathedral square, where they will perform their plays about the wonders of creation and the life of Jesus, and I will be there to see. God keep Morwena. 19th day of June, feast of Saints Gervas and Protus, whose relics restored the sight of a blind butcher in Milan. Corpus bones. Since last I wrote, I have seen heaven and hell, angels and devils, and the tortures of the damned. I must be much changed. We rode to Lincoln in a fine drizzle, but the city atop its hill was bathed in sunshine. From our room in the inn, I could hear the sharp cracking of horses' hooves on cobblestone, the cries of merchants and peddlers, the cook boys calling, "Hot pies, fat pigs and geese, come and eat," and the incredible noise of too many people in too small a space. Lincoln is wondrous fair and curious. On our way to the tooth puller, we walked streets so steep a fat bishop pushed from the top would not stop rolling until he reached the River Trent. On either side were merchants' booths with wares spread out upon the counters, cloth, ribbons, candles, needles, boots, belts, spoons, knives, arrowheads, and more. Above the shops, the second stories leaned so far over the street that Mistress A could pass a sausage to Mistress B across the road without leaving her house. The crowded city swarmed with dogs, cats, roosters, geese, pigs, horses, merchants, travellers, housewives hurrying to market, children running with their buckets to the well, serving maids emptying chamber pots, and all manner of busy, bustling creatures. Near the market square, we passed a man with his head and hands held tight in stocks, being pulled through the streets in a wagon. Caught selling spoiled fish, he had some of his stinking goods hung round his neck like a necklace, and the wagon was followed by hundreds of cats, hungry and hoping. Children and even some vengeful housewives followed along, throwing sticks and mud and garbage at the wagon. One old woman threw rotten carrots and onions, while another gathered them up in her apron and hurried off to make soup. When we reached the tooth puller, the beast roared again, but the tooth is now out. His jaw is black and swollen. I thought perhaps my mother was right and evil spirits had entered, But he roars no louder, and swears no more, and stinks no worse. So mayhap all is well. The next day being Corpus Christi, we heard Mass, and then followed a procession of priests and merchants into the cathedral yard to see them play the story of the Last Judgment. A two-tiered wagon held heaven on its upper story and earth below. At the side was the mouth of hell, smoke and flames belching out, and the awful cries of the damned, suffering every kind of beating, roasting and grilling. I hope to have nightmares from this for months. Heaven was remarkably crowded, considering how few people we are told are good enough to get there. Angels with golden skin and golden wings flew about on golden straps, playing on golden harps. One angel caught on the branches of an apple tree. The angel struggled and cursed devilish curses, but finally climbed down unhurt, and the play went on, with God and the saints singing and dancing and blowing on golden horns, calling each man to answer for his deeds. Below on earth, demons bristling with horned horsehair masks tried to drag sinners into the mouth of hell, while behind their backs, the Virgin Mary pulled the poor souls out of the hellfire with her own hands. Then the devil himself appeared, hoofed, horned and tailed, clad in a wolfskin, bedecked in bells, shaggy and awful, and smelling like last week's herring. In a deep ringing voice he called, "Foul-tempered wives who cause men to grieve, murderers, thieves, my welcome receive." If he had called for disobedient daughters, I think I would have repented my sins and cried for mercy right there in the cathedral yard. One clumsy devil knocked over the ladder to heaven, smashing it to bits and stranding players up above. While someone built another, God and the angels entertained us with songs and bawdy stories. Then the new ladder went up. We all cheered. God came down, waving to the audience, and the play was over. 20th day of June. Feast of St. Alban, beheaded by a soldier whose eyes then fell out. St. Alban is buried near here, at St. Alban's. We returned in the midst of furious house cleaning. The courtyard and the orchard were bedecked with wet linen, hanging from ropes and walls and trees, while kettles bubbled with strong-smelling soapy water. Tonight my body will rejoice. Clean linen. Home can never match the excitement of Lincoln, but I was happy to see my mother again. She is well, and the babe she carries too. God save us all. 21st day of June, Feast of St. Leufrid, 48 years an abbot. Old Tam, the father of Meg from the dairy, finally has three pigs, so Meg will marry Thomas Baker's oldest son, Alf, as soon as they have a cottage. Alf is puny and sneezes all summer, but still I would be Meg, about to marry the choice of my heart, rather than the Lady Catherine, promised to a pig. I am desolate. 22nd day of June, Feast of St. Ebby the Younger, who cut off her nose to protect her virtue from marauding Danes. This afternoon was flea-catching. I spread a white cloth on each bed so even my weak eyes could see the little black fleas as they jumped. I then caught each one and crushed it between my finger and thumb. It is tedious and leaves me bumpy and red with bites, but does not overvex my brain, so I can think and wonder while I work. Today I thought about ways the shaggy-bearded oaf who wishes to marry me might die and leave me free. He might be eaten by wolves, or struck by lightning, or explode from eating too much. He might encounter a dragon bigger and meaner and more evil even than he, or be disemboweled by a Turk or a jealous husband. Mayhap all his teeth will fall out, and he will be unable to eat, and so will starve to death. Or he might jump off a roof in a drunk, thinking he could fly. He could be run over by a peddler's wagon full of heavy iron pots, or have corrupt and rotten ulcers eat away his body. I could put deadly thorn apple or monk's hood in his soup, or train my birds to fly north and peck him to death. Or a giant hand might reach down and pinch him between its thumb and finger. Life is full of possibilities. If only something would happen soon. 23rd day of June, Midsummer Eve, and Feast of St. Ethelreda, who died of a tumour on her neck, divine punishment for her vanity in wearing necklaces in her younger days. All of the world is celebrating Midsummer Eve, eating and drinking and dancing in the fields. I cannot. Filled as I am with dread over this marriage business. If only the bonfires lit throughout the Shire this night to drive demons and dragons away would drive unwelcome suitors away as well. I am going to bed with the sounds of singing in my ears, but not in my heart. 24th day of June. Midsummer Day and Feast of St. John the Baptist, our Lord's cousin, whose head King Herod gave to Salome as a reward for her dancing. Where will next Midsummer Day find me? 25th day of June, Feast of Adalbert of Egmond, about whom we know nothing, but who works miracles at his tomb. Last night, Ralph Littlemouse dreamed he saw Perkins' granny sitting by the side of the road with blood on her clothes. This morning, he ran to her cottage, but she was already dead. He thinks she must have been elf-shot, for there are no marks on her, so we all are carrying bread in our pockets to protect us from the fairies. Glynna Cotter and Thomas Baker's wife Anne washed and dressed the old woman and laid her on the table in her cottage. Tonight all the villagers will watch. I do not know why they call it watching, when it is really singing and games and drinking, but at least she will not be alone. They have sent to the high meadow for Perkin to come home. My heart breaks for him. 26th day of June, Feast of John and Paul, Roman martyrs who were buried in their garden. We took Perkin's granny from her cottage to the church in the dark, although I could see a sliver of silver light to the east, and new dawn would soon be upon us. Father Hugh said Mass, and a lot of things about sinners and hell fire, and how this should be a mirror to us all, for we all shall die, and none know when. But nothing about how she had the merriest eyes I ever saw, or how, although she was no bigger than Ralph Littlemouse's youngest, she always had a lap big enough for a crying child, or how she made the best soul cakes in the village. I tried to convince Perkin to sleep in our hall tonight, but he said no. He will spread his bed by the fire in his granny's cottage, as he always does when he is not in the high meadow with the goats, and will do so every night, until he leaves to be a scholar. 27th day of June, Feast of St. Cyril of Alexandria, fierce enemy of the Novatians, Neoplatonists, Nestorians, and the imperial governor Orestes. Before light this day, I awoke with an inspired notion. I slipped out of my bed and into my clothes and was at the dairy before light. Meg was already there, trying to coax milk from an unwilling cow. "Meg, I have an inspired notion," I said. "You and Alf need a cottage. Perkins' granny does not. I think God sent Perkins' granny's cottage to you." Meg's eyes lit as though I had set a torchlight to them. "A cottage," she sighed. "Married," she sighed. "Me and Alf," she sighed. We jumped around the dairy a bit, and then Meg stopped, biting her lip and scowling. "Your father, my lady, would he? Could we? Could you?" I knew what she was trying to ask. While Meg finished coaxing the cows, I went to coax my father. I found him in the hall with his breakfast bread and ale, frowning at the snoring lump that was Odd William, lying between himself and the warmth of the fire. "Sir," said I, "the morning dawns fair. I hope it finds you well." "Slurp," said my father. "For certain," I continued. "Perkins' granny is in heaven this day, watching over us all. I know God would want her with him, so good she was, and so generous. God ever rewards the generous." "Slurp," said my father again. "Generous as she was, I know Perkins' granny would want to share what she had with those of us left behind. Her warmest mantle with the miller's wife, her extra stockings with Anne Baker, and," I said, taking a big breath, "her empty cottage with young about-to-weds who have none of their own." My father stopped in mid-slurp. His brain woke up. He understood. Greed blossomed in his tiny eyes, and he bargained with me for the cottage. Finally, he agreed to let Meg and Alf have it in exchange for one of Meg's dowry pigs and my willingness to consider the shaggy beard marriage. So I told Meg, and Meg told Alf, and they will be married on Sunday and have Perkins' granny's cottage. Perkin will still have his bed by the fire when he is not in the high meadow with the goats, and someone to see he eats a hot meal on cold days. And his granny in heaven will smile at me, and all will be well. June 28th, St. Peter's Eve, and Feast of the Martyrs, St. Potamiena, who had boiling pitch poured over her body, and St. Basilides, a soldier who was kind to her. I had good reason to hide from Morwenna today, for I had the notion to make a picture for Perkin of his granny in heaven, and did not wish to be stopped and made to sew or weave or practice walking with my eyes down. I used my best inks and brushes, and a new whole sheet of vellum taken by night from the stack William Steward uses for the household accounts. In my picture the sun shines, for Perkins' granny suffered greatly from the cold. She is gaily dressed in a new green kirtle, and dances in a meadow with Perkin and goats. For I think heaven would be no heaven for either of them without goats. She is smiling and has all her teeth. Perkin leaves in 2 days to return to the high meadow, so I will leave the picture in the cottage where he will be sure to find it. 30th day of June. Feast of St. Theobald of Provence, hermit, patron of charcoal burners. Perkin has gone, but first brought to me his thanks, his granny's earthenware cup, and a kiss. My insides are very warm, although the morning is cool. July. First day of July. Feast of Saints Julius and Aaron, British farmers who suffered horrible physical tortures at the hands of the Romans. I was at Meg's father's cottage before light this day to bring her the gift of my second best blue kirtle, her only one being old and patched and green, a colour sure to bring bad luck to a bride. I then went to the church to await everyone at the church door, where William Steward and I would represent my father on this occasion. Meg said it would bring them great honour and great luck. I think the luck is that my father did not come himself. Soon I heard the sound of laughter and singing and the strumming of gittens as Meg and Alf led the villagers up the path to the church. Meg's yellow hair, usually tightly plaited and pinned up so as not to hang in the milk or become tangled in the butter churn, fell loose in a river of gold to her knees. A circlet of bluebells and cowslips and day's eyes crowned her shining head. My blue kirtle matched her eyes. Morwena says beauty and rainbows soon pass away, but I know for the rest of my life when I look at Meg, I will see her like this. Alf looked much the same as always, except he had no flower in his hair. After exchanging vows at the church door, Alf gave Meg half a penny and kept the other half for himself so that, he said, they would always remember they were two halves of one soul. It was very pretty. Then mass, and, with church bells ringing, to the alehouse for the bride ale. Since the sky was the same clear blue as Meg's eyes, John Swan had set up tables outside, strewn with rosemary, bay, and the petals of the wild white rose. The afternoon was gay with music and dancing, and much ale drinking, with the pennies paid for the ale to go to Meg for her new cottage. Now it grows dark, and I am in my chamber writing. The party continues, and will all night. Some will even have bride ale for breakfast. But Meg and Alf have gone home to the cottage God sent them, with help from Perkin's granny and me. Second day of July. Feast of Saints Processus and Martinian, Roman martyrs, whose relics cure the sick, reveal perjurers, and cure lunatics. I have been thinking about my own marriage. Once I dreamed of a handsome prince on a white horse decked in silks and bells. Now I am offered a smelly, broken-toothed old man who drinks too much. I would rather even Alf. But it occurred to me that what actually makes people married is not the church or the priest, but their consent, their I will. And I do not consent, will never consent. I will not. I cannot be wed without my consent, can I? They cannot bind me with ropes and force my mouth open and closed while my father says in a high voice, I will. I am told this has happened. But even my father could not be so cruel. I will not consent, and there will be no marriage. Amen. Fourth day of July. Feast of St. Andrew of Crete, stabbed to death by a fanatical iconoclast. I spent this summer evening lying in the field, watching stars come out in the sky. Free. 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 After my harrowing days locked away, I rejoiced to be free. It was like this. The evening after Meg's wedding, I encountered my father near the buttery. "Now we will get on with it, daughter," he said. "It is time to make good your promise and consent to marriage with Murgor." "Never," I said. "Your villagers are allowed to marry where they will, but your daughter is sold like a cheese for your profit. Never." He blinked 3 times, opening and closing his mouth. Then his face grew purple, and he choked out disconnected words. "Meg, cottage, promise, marriage." "I promised to consider such a marriage, sir, and I did," I said. "I considered it, and I reject it. I will not consent." So there was shouting and slapping and stomping away, which ended with me locked in my prison of a chamber without my inks, in an attempt to break my spirit. Earlier this evening he came to my chamber, the only person I had seen in 2 days, except Morwena and Watt. Standing in the doorway, he said, "Your mother has prevailed upon me to let you out. You are to go down to supper. You will be quiet, agreeable, and obedient, and you will wed the pig." He left the door open. I am free, and I will not wed the pig. 5th day of July, feast of St. Morwena, an Irish maiden who worked miracles. This morning I strewed the bed with flowers for my Morwena, who irritates and torments me sometimes, but whom I love. Hers is the first face I ever saw. Sixth day of July, feast of St. Sexburga, wife of Erkenbert, mother of Erkengotta and Ermengild. Elis's baby husband has died, and she is a widow, without ever really being a wife. Since she met him, but seldom, I think mayhap she is none too sad. I wonder if George knows. 7th day of July, feast of St. Willibald, who wrote a book called Hodoporicon, about his travels to Rome, Cyprus, Syria and the Holy Land. My father left this day for London. The manor is already quieter and cleaner, and I can breathe more easily. 8th day of July, feast of St. Urith of Chittlehampton, killed by jealous haymakers. After Mass this day, I walked over to Perkins Granny's cottage, now home to Meg and Ulf. Parsnips and mutton were boiling on a pot over the fire, making the July day inside the cottage much hotter than outside. The air was grey and smoky. The dirt floor was fresh swept, but still dirt. The small straw bed, Perkins' mat on the floor, and the table where Perkins' Granny served meals all her life and was laid out the day of her death, was still the only furniture. But the small dark cottage seemed different, somehow lighter, and smelling young rather than old. There was such a feeling of love in there, of Meg and Alf, and their babies and their grandchildren to come, all together in this cottage, living their days together. Meg offered me some of the parsnip and mutton, but all sorts of sad and happy feelings were stuck in my throat like a lump, and I knew I couldn't swallow, so I went home alone to the hall. 10th day of July, Feast of the Seven Brothers of Rome, martyred with the encouragement of their mother, Saint Felicity, who was also martyred. I am over hot and as limp as dirty linen. This heat promises a good harvest, but sore distresses my mother. I sit each day with her, embroidering tiny clothes for the coming babe, and telling stories to take her mind from her body. I fear for her. 12th day of July, Feast of Saint Veronica, who wiped the face of the suffering Jesus with her veil, where his image remains to this day. It is too hot to write, too hot even for the cats to chase mice. 13th day of July, Feast of Saint Mildred, who became a nun to escape the attentions of an unwelcome suitor. There must be a better way. In this heat, my mother suffers much from swelling of her legs, which means the baby likely will be a girl. I applied a paste of bean meal, flour, vinegar, and oil, but the dogs kept trying to eat it. So I washed her off, and have been rubbing her legs with sweet-smelling oils and singing her sweet songs, and it seems to help. 15th day of July, Feast of Saint Swithin, who wept in heaven and caused 40 days of rain. As I rubbed my mother's legs late into the night, she talked again about her first meeting with my father. I am amazed how soft and sweet her voice grows when she speaks of that big, dirty, rude, greedy, drunken beast. I told her it is as if we see two different men. She said marriage can do that. Marriage, I said to her, seems to me to be but spinning, bearing children, and weeping. Smiling, she said, marriage is what you make it, birdie. If you spit in the air, it will fall on your face. Patience, gentleness, and a willing heart will make the most of any union. It helps, of course, she added softly, if the man you marry is the fine kind of figure that your father... God's thumbs! Enough of this talk of my father's virtues. She must have caught warble fly from the cows, and it has gone to her brain. 17th day of July, Feast of Saint Alexis, who lived as a slave in his father's house and slept under the stairs. I met Elis this day in the meadow. She is giddy and relieved to be married no longer. She says when she married the baby Duke, her father promised her that if she ever married again, she would have more choice about the man. Now that the baby Duke is dead and Elis a widow, she is determined to love and be loved as well as wed. I know she is speaking about George, but I do not know what will come. My Aunt Ethelfritha may be a bit mad, but she is definitely alive. 18th day of July, Feasts of Saints Edburger of Bicester and Edburger of Winchester, but not Edburger of Minster. The northern shaggy-bearded pig has sent me betrothal gifts, which I, of course, refuse, since I will not consent to marry him. He sent me a silver toothpick, a sewing kit, a gauze headdress in a stinking green that is my least becoming colour, and a pouch of silver. Corpus bones! His gifts are as unromantic and as unwanted as he is. His son Stephen sent me a bronze knife engraved on the blade with vines and leaves, and the words, Think well on me. A most excellent gift. 20th day of July. Feast of St. Margaret of Antioch, eaten by a dragon who then exploded, protector of women in childbirth. Oh, dear St. Margaret, protect my mother when her time comes. She is old, over 30, and delicate, but you were strong and stubborn, and I can be as tough as boiled bear, so mayhap together we can sustain her. 21st day of July, Feast of St. Victor, Roman soldier and martyr. George and my Aunt Ethelfritha have come again. He still does not smile, and his eyes no longer flash green fire. He drinks too much ale and closes his eyes whenever someone mentions Elis's name. I could feel his pain, as if we shared one heart, so I left the table and went out to pester Perkin. 22nd day of July, Feast of St. Mary Magdalene, who was betrothed to John the Apostle. Morwena, Meg, and I have been gathering summer herbs and flowers for tonics. I love walking the fields in the morning sun, the smells in the still room where the herbs hang to dry, the wondrous glass vials and leather bottles arranged on the shelves, the old book where my mother's mother and her mother wrote recipes and hints and warnings for the doctoring. Many of the older remedies call for lark's wing or boiled raven. I will not use them, but use instead fish bones or nail trimmings or extra rue and sneezewort. No one here at the manor has died since I have been doing so, and I expect my remedies doctored just as well as the originals, and they are much kinder to the birds. 24th day of July, Feast of St. Gleb, stabbed in the throat by his cook. I have begun an herbal, a book of remedies and drawings that I can have with me always wherever I go. 26th day of July, Feast of St. Anne, Mother of the Virgin Mary. I have noticed lately how many male saints were bishops, popes, missionaries, great scholars and teachers, while female saints get to be saints mostly by being someone's mother or refusing to marry some powerful pagan. It is plain that men are in charge of making saints. 27th day of July, Feast of the Seven Sleepers, early Christians, who were walled up in a cave by pagans, awoke 200 years later to find their entire city Christian and died. A traveller sleeping in our hall last night said Brother Norbert and Brother Bertwald, the monks sent to Rome to find the remains of saints for our abbey, have returned. The holy relics they found will be installed with great ceremony in the abbey on Sunday. My father being from home, and my mother too big with child for travelling, George, Ethelfritha, and I will appear for our family. I am rapturous with holy feelings to think I will see pieces of actual saints whose souls must be with God, although their bodies lie in Croydon Abbey. We leave at dawn tomorrow. 28th day of July, Feast of St. Sampson, Welsh bishop, whose arm and staff are at the monastery at Milton Abbas. After dinner in the abbey guest house, I looked for Brother Norbert, so I might hear more about the saints he found in Rome and his adventures on the way. Brother Norbert, I was told, was weeding the herb garden. Brother Norbert, I discovered, was sleeping between the lavender and rosemary bushes. I cleared my throat several times loudly, and soon he awoke. The relics the monks brought from Rome, it seems, are the earthly remains of Felix the Roman and his brother Projectus. They were tax collectors, converted to Christianity by a bath attendant and betrayed to the authorities by their evil servant, Polycarp, who was later struck by lightning. Ordered to sacrifice to Roman gods, Felix and Projectus agreed, in fear for their lives and those of their families. A sudden rainstorm, however, put out the sacrificial fire. The Romans were enraged, thinking the brothers had lied to them and doused the fire deliberately by magic. Their explanations were ignored, and the brothers were condemned to be beheaded. But the soldier sent to carry out the sentence was struck by lightning. Finally, they were set upon by a maddened bull, who, after goring them to death, was also struck by lightning. Other Christians collected their body parts and buried them on a farm outside the city. This summer, Brother Norbert and Brother Bertwald met a soldier in an inn yard who told them the story and then, for only 12 silver pennies, led them to the martyr's grave on his mother's property. It was fortunate, said Brother Norbert, that they had the soldier to guide them, for the grave was hidden and unmarked in any way. The good brothers left Rome with the martyr's bones, a fingernail clipping, and a thread from Felix's best tunic. Glory be to God. 29th day of July, Feast of St. Lupus, a bishop who persuaded Attila the Hun to stop ravaging Gaul. This morning, the relics of Felix and Projectus were carried from the abbot's office to the church by a great procession of monks in a cloud of incense fumes and the smoke from 1,000 candles. The procession wound around the abbey grounds and into the church, where we all waited. After Mass, the abbot blessed us, and we were allowed to come to the altar to kiss the holy relics. When it was my turn, I found that Felix and Projectus were two tiny glass jars of dust set into large gold and jewel-encrusted holders. Felix's jar was much fuller. He must have been the taller brother. I said a prayer, asking the Roman brothers to help me get free of Shaggy Beard, and then we left for home. 30th day of July, Feast of St. Tatwin, Archbishop of Canterbury and Maker of Riddles. At dinner, I saw my Aunt Ethelfritha whisper something to George. He patted her fondly on her sleeve and smiled. My heart fell to my stomach. I was so distressed to see him love someone, not me. But then I rejoiced to see him smile again. Thank you, God. Bless my Aunt Ethelfritha and strike me dumb before I ever meddle with love again. 31st day of July, Feast of St. Germanus, the only saint I know who was a lawyer. Tomorrow is Lammas. Harvest is near. My mother grows larger every day. I will not consent. August. First day of August, Lammas Day, and Feast of St. Ethelwald, monk, cook, and builder of the largest organ in England. This day the church smelled much like the bread stall at a fair, from all the fresh-baked loaves brought in, thanks to God for the good harvest. Since I had no breakfast, the smells made my mouth water and my stomach rumble like an ox-cart on a rutty road. After Mass, we feasted in the hall. Of the many dishes, my favourites were the eel pie and the ginger wafers. My least favourite was the swan's neck pudding. Second day of August. Feast of St. Sidwell, Virgin, who died when her jealous stepmother incited the reapers to behead her. In the meadow the other day, I noticed how the trees stand bowed over, looking like old men with heavy burdens on their backs, hunched with worry. But what might a tree worry about? Mayhap about the young birds who are born amidst its branches, and then fly out into the world, where they could be caught by cats, stoned by boys, or snared and eaten, and never even say goodbye. About hot, dry summers and thirsty roots that cannot call for water and are never offered beer. About whether its leaves will turn fiery shades of red and gold for all to admire, or just shrivel and drop, or be blown off by early wind and rain. About being cut down to make a house or a barn, or worse, siege weapons for war or a battering ram. About being chosen to hang a thief whose body would be left there to hang like putrid fruit, and no young girl would lie beneath its branches and look up and wonder. Would I could ask one? Fourth day of August, Feast of St. Sithney. God asked him to be the patron saint of girls, but Sithney said he'd rather be the patron of mad dogs, so he is. I like to think of him as my father's special saint. My father returned today unexpectedly. There was no supper to his liking, so he kicked at the dogs and slapped the servers and bellowed, "Sweet Satan, why am I cursed with a cook who labours long in the kitchen, yet produces nothing but farts and belches?" I thought it was quite funny, but I laughed behind my hand. All is quiet now. Ninth day of August. Feast of St. Romanus, Roman doorkeeper and martyr. My mother lies sore afflicted with a fever. I can write no more. 10th day of August. Feast of St. Lawrence, who was roasted over hot coals, and now is the patron saint of cooks. Sometimes religion is as mysterious as love. Her fever still rages. 13th day of August. Feast of St. Cassian, a severe schoolmaster, who was stabbed to death by his pupils with their pen nibs. I will add this to my list of ways for Shaggybeard to die. My mother is finally well, thanks be to God, and still carries the child. I might be made to marry by force, but I vow no one could make me have a child. Not only is it dangerous and uncomfortable, the child could grow into Robert, or Geoffrey, or Attila the Hun. The beast my father has been even beastlier these days when my mother lay ill, at least with me and Morwena and the servants. He is like a lamb with my mother, or at least a dog or a squirrel or some other gentler beast. God's thumbs, when he does not roar, I do not know who he is, or just why I hate him. 15th day of August. Feast of St. Tarsitius, a Roman boy beaten to death with stones and clubs while protecting the holy bread. My mother has been ill again, and I have given over my days and most of my nights to nursing her. Sometimes I feel that she is the child, and I the mother, as I bathe her face and sing her songs and cajole her into eating just a bit of this meat or that cheese. In 1 week we go to Herringford to the fair, and for the first time I can remember, she will not be with us. 22nd day of August, feast of St. Alexander of Alexandria, who died a martyr after suffering numerous agonies from scrapers and whips. It is Bartlemas Fair, easily the busiest and merriest days of the summer. After days of preparation, we left the manor gay and giddy and ready for play, and today we are here. Before I left her, my mother gave me 10 pence for